Module 5, Technology. Virtually all of us have or use some form of technology in our work, whether it's a cell phone, a computer, or maybe even multiple computers, email, or some such other technological device or service. Electronics are omnipresent in our daily lives, especially at work. But for many of us, these tools, which were originally supposed to help us, have instead become burdens. We need ways to manage all these things so we can focus on getting our work actually done instead of managing the tools that we use to do the work. This module is all about strategies for dealing with some of the most common productivity and organizing challenges that come from working with technology. We'll talk in detail about how to get control over your email inbox, strategies for managing the files on your computer, and more. It's all about making technology work for you instead of the other way around. But first, a client success story. A client of mine was completely overwhelmed by the email in his inbox, and with over 5,000 messages in there, it's really easy to understand why he might feel pretty overwhelmed. The messages that he had in his inbox weren't filed in any way, and he said it was hard for him to find or keep track of anything in the email black hole, as he put it. So we worked together to whittle the messages in his inbox down to a manageable amount. For him, 50 messages was it. And now he feels on top of what's going on in his email. You can too. In the world of technology and our work, few things can feel more overwhelming than email. We can't control when it comes in, we can't control how much of it comes in, and we can't control what people are asking us to do in it. We're pretty much out of control when it comes to email. And so we need to look for strategies and techniques that we can use to help put us back in the driver's seat of managing our email. Remember the first time you received an email, your very first one? Maybe it was from a friend or a family member or a colleague, right when you first got your email account. It was probably pretty cool to receive an email. Someone out there cared about you. And it was nice, for a while. And then things started to change. You got more and more email. So much more that it probably became pretty overwhelming. And now, it's just always there. And there's always something new waiting for you. And generally, it's something that you don't usually want. That's the case for most of us. I remember when I first received my email account initially, years ago, I thought it was great. What a fun way to communicate with people. But in the world of work, the emails that come in often represent just one more set of to-dos. If emails only need to be read, that would be really easy. We could get through our email boxes pretty quickly. But just like each piece of paper that comes through our door doesn't just need to be read, oftentimes there's other to-dos or other actions associated with them, the same is exactly true for emails. Very few emails need only to be read and then closed. Oftentimes you either need to respond, or pay a bill, or follow up on something, or do additional research, just like with our paper. The good news: you've already spent time developing a system for managing your paper and all of the to-dos associated with that. Guess what? We can do a very similar thing with your email. All email programs allow you to create either folders or labels which can help sort and separate your email. And the first thing that we want to do is take care of the actions that are required in our inbox. And if we set up a hot file system, just like we did for our paper, we can actually sort and separate our emails into action categories that will make it easier for us to take the actions that each email represents. So instead of seeing an inbox full of messages, each one requiring lots of different types of actions, you can instead create a series of hot folders that mirror those that you created for your paper. That way you can sort all of the calls that need to be made based on the emails into a calls folder. All of the e-bills could go into another folder. A third folder could be for things you need to research online. So take a look in your workbook. There's a sample set of categories that you might want to create for email hot files, slightly different than for your paper-based hot files. But here's a suggestion. Try to create category names in both places that are as similar as possible. This will help streamline things as you move from one system to the other, from paper to electronic. But the key concept here is that in order to act on our emails, we need a better system than just letting them sit in our inbox. We need dedicated spaces for the actions that they require, just like we need that for our paper. Once you start separating your emails into actions, it's much easier to actually process them, rather than seeing them in a big jumble in your inbox. Since we're talking about creating categories and labels and folders, this would be a good time to set up folders or labels in your email program that mirror what's in the rest of your filing system. So for instance, you're going to have certain emails that require actions. Those would be in the hot files. But again, you're going to have ones that don't. You're going to have ones that just need to be filed or held onto. Those can go into an archival area, just like with your paper files. So you may want to create folder structures that mirror what's in your paper system. The same category names, the same file names. That will make it, again, easier for you to find things when you need them later. Of course, on the computer, you can do something that you can't with paper. You can search for things, and relatively pretty quickly and easily. But sometimes it's helpful just to have things in a certain spot. So you may want to have folders for each of your individual clients, or projects, or vendors. Or maybe you have something big that you're working on over time. That might get a special folder, and it might go at the top of the list. Look for ways that you can use the email tool itself to help you organize your emails in a way that makes it easy for you to find them later. Having them in one giant folder which you search through is a start, but it's even easier if things are already grouped when you're searching. So don't rely simply on the email's search function for you to find your things. Give it an extra boost by putting things in folders that make sense for you. That will help you out later. One really great folder to create, or label to create, depending on your email system, is something for newsletters. Many of us receive email newsletters. They might contain entertaining, helpful, useful, or just plain funny info. All of those are great. But we probably don't want to read them right when they pop into our inbox. Instead, we want to read them at our leisure, when we have time. And that could be a while from now. So they need a place to go until we actually have time to read them. Create a folder for those newsletters or label, and once you do that, you can use a tool called filters or rules to automatically sort your email for you. This can be a huge productivity booster. How this works is this. You set up a folder or a label in your email program, and then once you have an email that you don't want to see in your inbox, you create a filter or a rule for it. And this is in your settings for virtually any email program, whether it's web-based or that lives on your computer. Essentially, you tell your email program, whenever a message comes in from this particular sender, please forward it into this folder. Bypass my inbox. I don't want to see it. I don't want to read it until I have time to deal with it. That way, as new messages come in, you can skip past those messages. You don't even have to read them. They'll be in a special folder waiting for you. And you'll know that there's messages waiting for you because that folder name in the list will be bolded. And usually it has the number of unread messages waiting inside. So you can try this feature called filters or rules for virtually any sender that you receive regularly. You might do this for specific clients. If you're receiving emails from a client all the time, you might set up a special folder for them, set up a filter or a rule, and then automatically when they send you a message, it goes into a special folder. This might be a great tool also for vendors or resources that you use regularly. This can save you quite a bit of time because you don't have to read it in your inbox and think about it, and you don't have to file it. Those two things already get handled for you automatically by the computer. When it's time for you to process through your email, then you can go into the individual folders and take the corresponding actions then. But everything is already pre-sorted for you, so it should be easier for you and less time-consuming for you to go through your email. If you want more information about filters or rules, simply look in the search tool in the help in your email program. They usually have lots of information on how to set these things up. It's very easy and extremely effective in time-saving. Okay, so you might be saying, great, Josh, you know, you've given me some tools for managing all the things that are new, but I have 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 messages sitting in my inbox. What do I do with those? So first you have to ask yourself, does it bother you to have that many messages in your inbox? For some people, that's perfectly okay. If it's okay, then leave it alone. But if it's not, then we need to look for some strategies for dealing with that. Here are a few. The thing to note about email is that it gets old really fast, especially if you're receiving lots and lots of emails. The ones that you received last month or 6 months ago or last year may not be relevant at all anymore. So as email ages, its relevance continues to go down. So the things that are in your inbox that are pretty old, you may not need to deal with at all. So one strategy that I like to do with clients is we take things in chunks. We start managing the newer email first and get it into a hot file system so that from today forward, we can manage your email more effectively. And then after today's email is starting to be managed better, we go back and we go through the oldest emails and start archiving those. Chances are, as you go through the oldest emails in your inbox, you're going to find a lot of them that can just be deleted. Very few of them will likely still need actions. So although there may be thousands of messages in your inbox, chances are you've probably already acted on a bunch of them. And chances also are that many of them that are left, you won't need to act on anymore because they're out of date. So don't be scared or worried if you've got a large backlog of messages. I would guess if you're still in business, you're acting on the ones that are really key already. This is about more so clearing out the space so that you don't see that overwhelming number in front of you. So that's one strategy, working on the newest and then working on the oldest. And that is a really effective way to manage your older emails as well as your new ones. Another strategy is to pick a date, any date, and emails that have come in before that date, you're simply going to archive. You create a new folder and you call it archive, and maybe you decide that January 1st of last year is when you want to archive everything prior to that date. You create a folder with that date, and then you move everything from that date and older into that archive folder. If you need something, you can always go back into it, but that method clears out your inbox pretty quickly. And again, the things that are truly old are highly unlikely that they still need your attention. A third strategy, work on a chunk of your email backlog each day. So let's say you have 5,000 messages in your inbox. You could spend a few minutes a day, maybe 20 minutes, and your target might be to get through 100 of those messages. You're going to work quickly because, again, these are old and not top priority. So you're not going to want to spend tons of time focusing on the ones that you no longer want or need. Instead, it's more so that you're looking for the ones that you still need to do, which will be pretty rare. So you could do a chunk a day, maybe 25, 50, or 100 messages, and work over time until you've cleared out that backlog. Another strategy, it's called the treasure hunt. You look through that backlog of messages specifically for the things that you still need to do and ignore the rest. So you're looking for the priorities or tasks, the treasures that are still in that inbox but that have been pushed down past the front screen of your messages. Once you've found those and you've moved them into your hot files, then you can take the rest and archive those. All the old messages can now be put away. So the goal here is to look for the things that are undone and move them into the system that you're now using for managing the tasks instead of having them just sit in your inbox. So there's a number of strategies that you can use to go through that large email backlog, whether it's working on the newest messages and then the oldest, or archiving everything prior to a certain date, working on chunks, or going on a treasure hunt for the things that you still need to do. And you could try a combination of these strategies because each one might work for you in a different way. But have some strategy if you've got lots and lots of messages in your inbox and they're bothering you. Have some strategy for managing them and going through them. That way you can clear out your messages and have your inbox be truly for the things that are brand new, just like your paper-based inbox would be. Another strategy for managing your email is to set a limit or a threshold for how many messages you want to let sit in your email inbox at any given time. For most of us, when we see our inbox number creep past 25 or 30 or 50 or 100, we can quickly get overwhelmed because, again, each email doesn't need to be read. Most of them are to-dos of some sort. And when we've got hundreds or thousands of to-dos staring at us, it can be pretty stressful. So set a number for yourself for how many messages you want to let sit in your inbox. Maybe it's 25, maybe it's 50, maybe it's 100. Whatever it is for you, decide on what that number is. Then, as your messages start to come in, if you notice that you're starting to get past that number that you've set for yourself, recognize that you need to set an appointment with yourself a real-life scheduled appointment to work on processing your email. Because if you don't, that number will simply keep increasing. And in order to keep it managed, you need to manage it. Speaking of setting aside time for email, it's super, super important that if you expect to keep your email under control, that you set regular times to process it. Email somehow is in the public consciousness as something that we're supposed to get to when we have spare time. But let's face it, who has spare time? I personally don't know anyone who does. And let's say that they magically did have some spare time. Would they want to spend it processing email? I doubt it. So if email is important to you and to your business, make sure that you've scheduled specific times throughout your day or your week when you plan on dealing with email. Email takes time to go through, just like paper does. And if you give it the time that it requires, it won't become overwhelming. What I suggest is this. Set 3 times throughout your day when you process email. Once in the morning, once in the early afternoon or after lunch, and once at the end of the day. That, for most of us, will handle the email that comes in. Very few of us are on a 24-hour cycle where we are expected to respond to email instantaneously. If we process it 3 times throughout the business day, it won't be more than a few hours before someone receives a response from us. That's pretty good. Even if you did it just 2 times a day, that is still very effective. So, whatever your level of needing to be responsive is, make sure that you set a schedule around processing your email that fits with that. You don't want to do your email once a week and have 300 messages waiting for you. That isn't an effective strategy, and it's generally not responsive enough in today's business world. But once, twice, or 3 times a day is usually plenty. Find the balance that's right for you, and block those times out on your calendar as a real appointment with yourself. Because that's the way that you will stay on top of your email. A final thought on the world of email. One of the email bugaboos that I find with both myself and with clients is that little indicator that pops up in the corner of the screen letting you know that you have a new message. This was probably really helpful when people weren't so immersed in the world of email, but most of us check our email pretty regularly now, regardless. We hardly need any reminders that let us know that we have a new message. By default, we probably do have new messages, and we certainly don't need the computer to remind us of that fact. So I encourage you to turn off the new message waiting indicator, and you can turn this off in the settings of your email program. Instead of having the message pop up, you've already scheduled several times throughout the day when you're going to be processing your email, so there's really no need for the reminders. The reminders really do only one thing. They distract us. Let's say you're working on a word processing document. Maybe it's a proposal to an important client. Your message waiting indicator pops up saying that you have a new message in your inbox. So you switch over, in the middle of working on your proposal, to your email program. And, oh, it was just a newsletter that came in. But, hey, since you're in your email already, let's take a few minutes and see what else came in the interim. Well, not really anything too important, but... Wait, what was I working on before? Oh, yeah, the proposal. So you switch back to your proposal, and before you know it, you've completely lost your train of thought, and your productivity is shot into the toilet. Terrible. Waste of time. So instead of having that indicator pop up, choose when you're going to process your email and process it at those times. Turn off the new message waiting indicator. You'll be much more effective when you're deliberate about checking your email. So we've talked about some strategies for managing your email, but what about all the other documents and files that live on your computer? Those need a system too. Because just like with our paper files, we want to be able to find and retrieve and put away those documents really quickly and easily when we need them. Just as with email, most computers now have pretty effective search functions, but that still isn't as effective as just knowing where your things are. And with the systems that we're going to talk about now, you'll know where your things are more often than not, and hopefully definitely more than you do right now. One thing to keep in mind is that you've already spent some time and energy and effort at this point creating some structure for your paper files. You may have used a file map with category names on them. Why not use the same tool for your computer-based systems as well? Since conceptually putting things away is the same, whether it's in the physical world of paper or in the virtual world of the computer, we can use the same category names, the same structures, just like we do for our paper in the computer world. And actually, the more that we do that, the more we use the same structures and the same folder style, the easier it will be for us to find and put things away in both places, because we're not trying to think of new ideas for the same types of information. The information is the same in both places, it's just in a different format. So we want to keep the structures that we use to keep those formats as similar as possible. So ideally, you want to use the same category names on your computer as you do for your paper. You might want to take your file map out and create a new set of empty folders on your computer that are based on those file names. Then you can open up a new window in your computer and drag your existing folders and files into that new structure that you just created. That structure should match what's in your paper, so it should be really easy for you to put things away in a similar fashion. You're basically just doing the same type of filing that you did with your paper, just in the computer instead of with the actual documents. Now, paper filing is not exactly the same as the computer, however, because the papers themselves don't need names, but the files on your computer do. And that's why it's so important to have really effective naming strategies for your documents. You want to make sure that you name your documents effectively so that as you open a file full of folders, you don't have to search through and try to determine which is the actual document that you're looking for. Instead, you want to name them really effectively. Most computers now can let you name things with a really long string of characters. So having things in the file name, like a description of what the file is about, the version number, the date it was created, who created it, all of those things can generally fit in the file name itself. When those things are in the file name, you can very quickly open up a folder full of files and very simply and easily find the one that you're looking for without having to open and close each individual file. This can be a major time saver. If you've ever opened up a folder full of documents and had to open and close every single document to find the one that you were looking for, you know what a major waste of time that is. Instead, name your files really effectively. And there's a guide in your workbook along with some samples that you can mirror for your own files. Now, you may not have time right now to go back and rename all of your old files using this new format. However, I would encourage you, as you move forward and you create new files, instead of letting the computer automatically name the document for you, whether it's untitled or the first string of characters that are in the document, instead of letting the computer do that, take a few minutes, create a naming convention now, which is simply a set of guidelines or a set of rules for what you want to call your electronic documents in the future. Use that structure for any files that you create from today forward. That way, all of your new things will be organized in a fashion that makes it much easier to actually find them and retrieve them later. When you have time, you can go back through your older files and rename those and integrate them into your new filing system. Again, this will make it much more effective for you to find your documents when you need them. In addition to the files that are already on your computer or the electronic files that you create, you may decide that you want to do away with as much paper as possible, and one of the ways to do that is by scanning. Scanning is where you take your papers and you put them into a machine called a scanner, and the scanner translates them into an image file that lives on your computer. This provides a number of benefits. It saves you the space of paper. You don't have to take up any space in your office for any files. Also, once papers are in your computer and in electronic format, they can be searched, just like you would search for any other document that's on your computer. Because the software that comes with most scanners reads the text that's on the documents and translates them into a format that your computer can then search through. So this can be super helpful. It can make it a lot easier to actually find and retrieve the information that you're looking for. One of the downsides, however, of scanning is that it often can be quite time-consuming. If you have many drawers worth of files, it can take hours to scan all the documents in. Now, there are services that will do the scanning for you, but they can be quite costly. So there's definitely pluses to scanning. You can find your things easily, and it saves a lot of space, but there are costs that are associated with it as well. It's either your time scanning the documents, or the cost associated with having it done through a scanning service. If you are going to be scanning your documents, first you definitely want to weed through the documents that you have. There's no point scanning documents that you no longer want, need, or use. So it's helpful to begin a scanning project after you've already done a significant amount of weeding through your files. Another thing to keep in mind is that if you are going to be doing scanning, you need to set aside time for either doing the weeding or doing the scanning, or both if you're going to be doing the whole project yourself. If you're not going to be doing the scanning yourself, you need to set aside time for sorting and separating the documents so that when the company scans them, it can name them effectively and put them into appropriate folders. They won't know automatically what to call your files, so you'll need to tell them what to call the files or the folders that you want the documents in. Some of the costs associated with scanning: a desktop scanner, a good high-speed one, not one that you feed the sheets through one by one, that will take forever, but one that you can put a stack of 25 or 50 documents in, will generally cost you between $300 and $500 for a basic desktop scanner that comes with software. A scanning service will cost a different amount. Usually they price it per page, usually between 5 and 20 cents per page, depending on whether the document is in color or whether you want both sides scanned. A typical file box worth of documents will cost a few hundred dollars to have scanned. So depending on how much you need scanned and how frequently you plan on doing your scanning yourself, one or the other option might be a better fit for you. If you're planning on reducing your paper on an ongoing basis, it's helpful to have a scanner that sits on your desk at all times. And these can be extremely effective tools for managing your paper on an ongoing basis. If you go down the scanning route, know that it's a commitment. The papers won't jump into the scanner and scan themselves for you. So if you want less paper in your office, it's helpful to have a scanner around and have a set schedule for when you're going to scan your documents, whether it's at the end of every week or maybe a few minutes at the end of each day. But setting aside the time to manage this type of paper, just like you would for any of your other papers, is really essential. If you're keeping any sort of important data on your computer, whether it's email, photos, or your client documents, it is essential that you have a strategy for backing up your information regularly. Imagine what would happen if you lost this past week's or months or years worth of business data. For most of us, that would force us to close our doors. We wouldn't even know where to start or how to reconstruct all of that information. So if you have anything that you couldn't do without if there were a fire or some sort of disaster, or if your computer was stolen, it's essential that you have a system for backing up your information. And this can be accomplished very simply. You can get an external hard drive or a flash drive, or more frequently now I'm recommending to clients that they back up using an external data service, where essentially there's a little program that lives on your computer, and when your computer is idle, when you're not using it, it sends little bits of data up to a secure server on the internet, and they store your data for you. That's effective because you don't actually have to do anything. Your computer does it automatically. But it doesn't really matter so much what method you choose of backing up your computer. More so it matters that you do something, and it even matters more that you do it regularly. What you don't want is to back up once in a while, or when you remember to. You want it to happen like clockwork. Because again, if you backed up 6 months ago, and you lost your computer today, the data that happened in the last month or so is where the action is for you, not what happened 6 months ago. So you want to have a regular backup set of your data, and you want to make sure that it's recent. So whatever backup method you choose, choose something, it's essential, and do it regularly. Your business could very well depend on it. Many of us have more than one computer at this point. We might have a desktop computer and a laptop, or a laptop at home and a laptop at work, but we often need access to the same data wherever we are, so that we can continue working on our projects wherever we happen to be. This can be pretty tricky. We might forget a file at home that we need at the office, or vice versa, or we're not sure which one the most recent version is, and we start working on one, only to find out later that we've already completed some piece of it that was on another computer. So if you have multiple computers, it's essential that you find some method for synchronizing your data so that everything is the same all the time on both of your computers. There's a couple different ways that you can do this. One, you could save your information onto a flash drive and make that your base of data. And you might keep certain projects on certain flash drives, or maybe you get one flash drive that has a lot of capacity so that you can keep all your important stuff on it. And then you would back up your flash drive, of course. But your flash drive would be where you would work on the documents themselves. Another strategy is to use software that can synchronize your different computers, either locally over your network at your home or your office, or over the internet. And there's a few different sets of software that do this, and these work pretty well. But my favorite method now is to use a service where not only does it synchronize your information across multiple computers, but it also keeps a secure backup of them online. And this is really helpful because if you were to lose one of your computers, or if your computer broke and you didn't have access to it or it was stolen, you could go online to the website for these different companies and then get a download of the document that you need to work on. So you have access to your stuff no matter where you happen to be. But the key idea here, whatever methodology you choose, is to not have different data in different places. You want to make sure that if you're in business and you're working on your stuff, that wherever you happen to be, you can use the same projects, files, documents without having to go back and forth physically between the different places where your computers happen to be. Your data should follow you, not the other way around. Another type of technology that you might be dealing with is your contact database. You may have a contact database that lives on your computer, one that you keep on paper like a Rolodex or a file of business cards, and still a third set of contacts that live on your phone. It's not helpful to have different sets of data in different places. It's better to centralize all of your contact information in one spot, whether that be a web-based address book like Google or Yahoo or MSN, or something that lives on your computer like Address Book on the Mac or Entourage or Microsoft Office Outlook. Choose a system and get all of your information into one spot rather than having it in multiple places. This lets you do a couple of things. One, it saves you time because it doesn't force you to look in multiple places for different pieces of information. Also, when everything is centralized, you can back up your information much more easily. That way, if there were a disaster, or let's say you lost your cell phone, you wouldn't lose all of your contacts along with that phone. They would be backed up on your computer. Similarly, if there were a fire at your office, you'd have a backup of your data someplace else so that you could retrieve all of your contact information when you need it. So centralizing all of your contact data is essential. It can save you time, and it can save your bacon if there is some sort of disaster or loss. Another benefit of centralizing all of your contact data is that then you can easily sync it to most modern cell phones, especially smartphones. These devices are designed to connect to your computer so that you can transfer all of that data and synchronize it so that your contact information, along with other things like your calendar and your email, are with you at all times. That makes it really easy to stay productive on the go. If you have a spare minute here or there, you can check email or work on your calendar or call an important contact. You'll have that information with you all the time. The trick here is that you don't want to get into the 24-hour availability cycle. This I've seen with clients time and again, where they get a device that's supposed to help them, yet at the same time they feel completely beholden to it because it's constantly alerting them that they have a new message or that there's an email waiting or they feel like they need to work. So it's important if you get a device like this to put some boundaries around how you plan on using it. You might want to turn off the alerts that let you know that you have a new message and instead check your emails or messages at specific points throughout the day, just like you would with your computer-based email. Don't feel beholden to this tool. It's meant to help you, not to be a burden. Technology is great. It can help us manage our business in ways that were never before possible. And technology can also be a burden. The difference comes when you learn how to manage the technology that's in front of you. You can use it as an empowering tool rather than as a burden. And hopefully some of the strategies that we talked about in this module will help you do just that. We covered many strategies for helping to manage your email, from creating hot files for your email to creating folders or labels, filtering your emails so that you don't have to sort them yourself, dealing with a backlog of emails if you've got hundreds or thousands in your inbox. We also talked about setting limits for how many messages you let pile up in your inbox, and setting aside time to deal with your messages when there's too many sitting in there. We talked about creating structures on your computer for filing and for your folders. We talked about the benefits and the challenges with scanning, and whether or not it's right for you. We mentioned how important it is for you to back up your data, and also how to work with your data if you have multiple computers. Finally, we touched on centralizing your contacts so that you can have them with you wherever you go, and smart ways to work with your cell phone or PDA. Take a few moments and fill out your action plan that's in your workbook as it relates to the items in this module, Technology.